Freedom Show, and I can tell you right now, today is not going to be a good show. Am I allowed to say that right from the get-go? It's just not good.
Tell me if you can see and hear me. First of all, I just lost 3 speed chess games in a row and like dumb, stupid moves. So I'm in a bad mood. I'm fighting a cold. It's just, I don't know. It's not good all the way around. Although Rap Freak gives me 3 thumbs up. So I don't know. Maybe I can turn this thing around. I'm not sure. But, the cold has got me, been fighting a cold for days. My wife is. Anyway, going to start with this idea of where dividends come from, and then I'll answer your questions. This came up. So I send out a newsletter every Sunday morning. You can subscribe to it with the link that will eventually be below this video. I don't think it's there right now, but it will be when we're done. And I sent out a link. I included the following article right here in a newsletter. I think it was a week ago. Whoa, what if there isn't a safe withdrawal rate? And I probably made a point. I didn't say this in the newsletter. I disagree with this article. Its conclusions, its analysis, I disagree with about everything in here. But sometimes I like to, look at things I disagree with. I probably should have put that in the article or in the newsletter, and I'll do that next time. I don't normally include articles that, I might disagree with some aspect of it, but I don't normally include articles where I pretty much disagree with about everything. But if I do next time, I'll make a point of it because a lot of folks, emailed me about it. But here's what I want to talk about. There's a statement in here. You probably can't read it. I don't know if I can make it any bigger. I guess I can. Right here. A dividend is not a withdrawal of profits or principal. It's the delivery of annual income to your mailbox. And as you might imagine, this author, and I don't know a thing about him, is a big fan of dividends for retirement as a way to fund retirement. But it got me to thinking, well, he doesn't think, I think it was a man that wrote this. Their name isn't actually on the article, but in any event, if a dividend doesn't come from profits, where exactly does it come from? And of course, one might say, we're talking about cash dividends or other types of dividends. We're not talking about cash. So I guess someone could say, well, it comes from the cash account, right? Uh-oh, Rob Berger, can you refresh? Video is blurry. I don't know how to refresh. I have no idea how to refresh. Let me look at, it is blurry. Well, I am going to end this. If I end this stream, I'm probably going to have to create a new one. Wait a minute. Did it get better? Why is it blurry? See, I told you this was going to be a problem tonight. I knew it. I lost 3 games in a row. That can't be good. That's terrible. Maybe I look better blurry. Oh, someone said it cleared up. Video clear here. Yeah, it's not a reboot of my machine, Noreen, I don't think, because I rebooted it today. But maybe it's better. I don't know. It doesn't actually look better to me when I look at it in YouTube Studio. Huh. It's better. Okay, well, I'll just keep going until you guys tell me it's not better. All right. This is what I'm looking at in YouTube. Yeah, it is better. I've cleared up. I don't know if that's good or bad. So back to this article. Where is it? Here it is. Obviously, but they come from the cash account, right? They come from a company's bank account. But that doesn't really help us because that just leads to another question, right? It leads to, well, where does the cash come from? And there is no rule in the sense that says, for example, a company can pay a dividend even if they made no profit for the year. They've got money in the bank, whether it came from profits in previous years, it came from money they borrowed, maybe they sold some assets, they can send it out to investors via a dividend. Now, some industries are regulated. Banks, have to abide by certain regulations and they have to have their capital plans approved, at least the large banks in particular. But, putting those issues aside, it comes from a cash account. But here's the thing. Long term, dividends, in fact, do come from profits. That's what funds dividends. If a company is not making profits or not making enough to support their dividend payments, eventually they're going to run into trouble. It's just like maxing out your credit cards. You can live beyond your means for a while, but eventually you get into trouble. Same thing with a company paying dividends. So I guess technically speaking, I would say this article is correct technically, but as a practical matter, it's just flat out wrong. And I want to show you, and excuse me, see, Kleenex, one of those nights. I want to show you Apple's recent, I was looking at Apple's recent 10K. They just filed it a couple of days ago when they released their earnings. And here it is. And we can actually look at the dividends they've paid. So this was their annual, their year end is not calendar year end. They just filed for fourth quarter. The 10K is the name of the form they file with the Securities and Exchange Commission. They file 10Qs on a quarterly basis. And then at the end of their fiscal year, and you can see here, it ended September 24th of 2022. Maybe you can see that. I can make this a little bigger. Then they filed this 10K. These are the kinds of things I read all day long when I worked at the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. And what we want to go to is their financial statements, which is item 8. All of these are governed by SEC regulations. So every 10K in terms of what each item represents is identical. They even have mine safety disclosures, which you may say, that seems odd for Apple. Is Apple a mining company? No, not applicable right here, but they still got to put it in there anyway. Going back to their item 8, let's get to it. Here it is. And I specifically want to look at shareholders' equity. So this is the consolidated statement of shareholders' equity will show us what's called retained earnings. All that is, it's a cumulative account. In other words, it's, you know, their current balance at the beginning of this of the year that just ended was $5.5 billion. That represents sort of the sum of everything that's happened in this account since Apple, you know, started. That you add and subtract to it from year to year to year. And so they started with an account balance of $5.5 billion. These numbers are in millions, so you basically add six zeros to the end of these numbers, and so that was the beginning balance. And you can see how it changed. So they added about $100 billion, right, from net income. That was their net income from the year. It's a pretty big number, right? And then here we go, dividends, right? They're taking it right out of net income, right out of retained earnings. $14.8 billion. That's what they paid in dividends. They had some common stock related to some equity awards. And then the big number right here is actually share buybacks. They've been buying back loads and loads of their own stock. They had $90 billion here, $85 billion the previous year, $72 billion before that. And they actually have a cumulative deficit of $3 billion. For a lot of companies, that might be a problem. For Apple, no, it's just how they're managing their capital. They've got so much cash and they make so much money every year. But the point that I want to make here is that dividends really do come out of profits as a practical matter, and certainly over the long term. That's exactly where they come from. And from an accounting sort of debits and credits perspective, this is why I say that dividends don't make you richer. The payment of them is because when they pay this dividend, they're going to debit the retained earnings account. And a few accountants out there, feel free to jump into the chat if I get something wrong. But they're going to debit this account. And of course, they have to have a matching credit. Where does that come from? Cash. Technically, it might first come from a dividend payable account when they declare the dividend. But when they pay it, it comes out of cash, which means they're removing last year almost $15 billion of cash from their account and giving it to their shareholders. So their value of their company goes down dollar for dollar. Certainly their intrinsic value does, right? But yeah, it's coming for profits. That's ultimately where it's coming from. And in fact, there's a concept known as dividend payout ratio. It's, you know, how much of a company's profit did it pay out in dividends? And if we go back to Apple, it's about 15%, right? $14.7 billion out of $99 billion. Now, some, I think, rightly so, in that ratio might say, let's factor in buybacks as well, in which case they paid out more than 100%, which happens from time to time. But you know, Apple is probably an unusual company in that regard. Generally, you know, you kind of like to see a div payout ratio in the 30 to 50% range. The problem with most companies, if you see it creeping up and creeping up, and now they're paying 60, 70, 80%, it's like their profits aren't able to keep up with the dividends they're trying to pay out. And that can be a problem. But the key is, it's still all based on profit. So there you go. Comes from profit. I don't know. Did I lose anyone? Is that probably everyone's gone? They're like, I don't know. Between the technical issues, Rob's cold, and that explanation, I'm gonna go watch funny cat videos. And I don't blame you. Maybe I should do that. Okay. Now I did look at some questions that came in before the show started. DL says, Rob, just received a new HSA fund options. What do you think of 65% VTI, which is Vanguard's total stock market ETF. That's great. 10% VIOV, which I'm pretty sure is that an Avantis fund? No, that's Vanguard. That's Vanguard. I don't know what it is. It's a value fund, right? Yeah. So it's Vanguard S&P small cap 600 value. Good fund. 10% VEA. Is that commodities? What is that? Oh, no, it's developed markets. Vanguard developed markets. These are all index funds. That's good. VWO is, I'm pretty sure I got this one right. It's emerging markets, right? The emerging market ETF. Yes. And VNQ, is that, I think that's REITs. You think I'd remember all these by now. I think it's REITs. I'm probably wrong. No, it's REITs. Yeah, I think that's a great combo to me. I mean, obviously, the bigger question would be your overall asset allocation. I'm assuming you're going to hold these funds in your HSA long term, since you're investing them rather than keeping them in the cash account. For example, if you said to me, I'm going to actually spend this money this year or next for medical expenses, I'd probably leave it in the cash account. But I'm assuming this is long term. I like that portfolio. One of the things that someone, I think, emailed me, no, it was in a comment, because I talked about HSAs last week. Someone had commented they had like 315,000 in their HSA, and is that too much? Someone pointed out, which I knew but just neglected to mention last week, is that you can kind of treat an HSA, or no, you can treat an HSA similar to a traditional IRA, in the sense that you can pull money out of an HSA for reasons other than medical expenses without incurring a 10% penalty, or 20% actually, I think it is, in the case of an HSA. Once you reach 65, it's not 59 and a half, it's 65, you will pay taxes on it. So if you oversave in an HSA, you could do it with that in mind if you felt you needed even more money, you know, effectively in a traditional IRA type of account. Thought I'd mention that. Kat wants to know, thoughts on bond investing for the short and the long term? I don't know what to say about that, Kat. I mean, I think bonds should be a part of most portfolios, certainly for folks like me in retirement or near retirement. I don't really see, I mean, for short-term investing, I would stick with short-term bonds, like treasuries, for example. If you're investing long-term, I tend to like intermediate-term bonds and bond funds. I don't know what else to say, though. If you have a specific question, I'll do my best to address it. Steve wants to know, what's the most tax-efficient way to withdraw money from an inherited IRA from a parent? So there are some exceptions to this, but I believe the new rules are you have 10 years to take it out. Don't hold me to that. But I think that's right. And so part of it would simply be withdrawing it in the years, you know, spreading it out over time in ways that generate the least amount of tax liability, which would depend in part on your taxable income each of those 10 years. It could vary from year to year, perhaps. But what I would do is just talk to a tax accountant, you know, get them to do the analysis for you. There's a tool that a lot of them might use called Holista Plan. Holista Plan. It's a weird name. I want to call them up and say, can we come up with a different name? Here it is. It's really more for advisors. What's the pricing on it? Actually, you can do this. You get a free trial. You can see it's not cheap. You see the prices here, but you get, yeah, a 7-day free trial. But basically, you can put in past tax returns. I think they can even maybe read tax returns off a PDF, and they can project in great detail your tax liabilities with different assumptions moving forward. I've never used the tool, but I've heard it's phenomenal. I don't know. All right. How's the is the stream doing okay? Let me know. Okay. Jay Davis wants to know, if I deposit the full $6,500 into a backdoor Roth in January, is $6,500 the limit? IRA contribution limits 2023. I guess it's $6,500. Is that right? I thought it went up higher than that. Oh my goodness. I have ad blockers on my thing so you guys don't have to see all the ads. And I can't tell you how many sites do the pop-ups complaining about it. It's like, you know, I'm in the business too. I get it. But maybe you just won't make any money off of me. Okay, I guess it is $6,500 up from $6,000. Okay, back to the question. Can I? So if I do a backdoor Roth in January, can I keep it in cash and dollar cost average out of the deposit throughout the year? Sure. I don't know why you couldn't. Every IRA account I've had, you can have it in cash or some, you could, you know, put it maybe in short-term treasury bond fund or yeah, cash, and then invest it throughout the year. Yeah, I don't know why you couldn't. Ratty wants to know my chess rating. It's not good. Lowest it's ever been. Well, that's not true. It's the lowest it's ever been in decades. USCF, I'm almost in, I don't even want to look it up, but I'm going to look it up. And I'll even show you the site where you look it up at. And you go, Berger, Robert, 1874. I was once over 2000. Yeah, that's sad. On chess.com, my blitz rating ranges from a low of about 1800 and I go over 2000 every now and again, but I can have these 200-point swings. All right. Okay, I think I got all of the pre-show questions. So let me go back to the top now. Freebird says, you are having a bad day. Yeah, my day wasn't too bad, to be honest. I finished watching Sunday night football. What a great game. Overtime, a lot of fun. Okay. So here's a Vishnu says, my understanding is that 40% of S&P 500 returns are from dividends. What are your thoughts on investing in VIG instead of VTI in current volatile market? Well, there's sort of the statement. I don't know. Certainly the S&P 500 pays a dividend yield of like 1.5. So I'm not sure what the 40% means. It is true that if you compare reinvesting dividends with not reinvesting dividends over long periods of time, the difference in the balance of the account is enormous. But people confuse what that means. It'd be like if let's say you got a $500 check every month. It doesn't matter where it came from. It was a gift. And you said, okay, well, I can reinvest it. Or I can spend it. What would my 30 years from now, what would my account look like depending on which choice I made? I can assure you, your account will be a lot bigger if you reinvest the $500 gift. It's the same thing with dividends. Yeah, obviously, if you reinvest it, you make more money. Of course you do, right? I know that wasn't your question. I don't know. Money's fungible. Yeah, you put money in, you save and you invest, it's good. Whether that money came from a dividend that got paid to you or a gift, I don't know. Did you win the lottery tonight? If they haven't done the drawing yet. Okay, we got to do it. We got to do a poll. If I can remember how. Let's see. Engage with your audience. Start a poll. Okay. Did you play Powerball for tonight's drawing? I think it's Powerball. If it's not, is that right? It's like, wait a minute. Is that Moneyball? No, that's not right. Power. It's the Powerball, right? It's like 1.9 billion, right? Let's see. Yeah. 1.9 billion. Okay. Did you play? Here we go. Ask your community. Can I vote? I can't vote. My answer would be no. I'm blurry again, aren't I? Am I blurry again? No, you're saying the video's okay. I look at my live stream and it's blurry to me. Whoops. Okay, what were we talking about? VIG. I told you tonight was going to be different than any other night. I am on cold medicine, so I don't know. Maybe it makes me a little loopy. So here is VIG, which is effectively, it's called a dividend appreciation ETF. Another way to think about it is it's a value fund, I'm guessing. See, now, like, what is happening to oh, there we go. I'm like, what? So it's not really a value fund. It's a blend, according to Morningstar. That's it. What about it? Yeah, it's always been a blend. Okay. In any event, what's its, see, its yield. This is something to understand about dividend investing. There's kind of two schools of thought, right? Maybe more, but two that I want to talk about. One school of thought is I'm going to invest in stocks that pay a high dividend yield, okay? Another one, and I think it's what VIG follows, is look, we don't really care so much about how big the dividend yield is. What we're really interested in is companies that grow their dividend. And those companies might always have a less than amazing dividend yield, right? Think Apple. Apple's dividend yield is terrible. It's gone. It's probably higher than it was because their stock seems to be going down here lately. What's their dividend yield? It's always been like 1%. Let's see here. According to, I'll just show it to you. You probably can't read it, but this is just the Apple stock thing. Right here, it's 0.66%. But here's the thing. The reason for that is because as they've made a ton of money, dividends have been going up. If you think about it, like if we go back, did I get rid of their, let's go back and look at their financial statement for a second. So if we go back to item 8, whoops, let's try that again. You'll notice we go to their shareholder equity. Come on. There we go. You'll notice that the dividend amount, which is right here, hasn't changed much. It's a little over $14 billion in 2020, $14.4 in 21, $14.7. This past fiscal year, you look at that and you think it's gone up a little bit, but not much. But there are fewer and fewer and fewer shares outstanding. So you've got to factor that in too. Why? Because they're buying back a ton of shares. So my point is their dividends are going up, but so is their price. Again, it's been down here this year, but generally going up. And so their yield is not all that impressive, but their dividend growth, and I haven't actually calculated it, but it's pretty strong. And so that's sort of the second approach to dividend investing, not reaching for that great yield, but trying to find companies. They may have a relatively low dividend yield because their price is so high, but they're growing that dividend. And so I'm curious, none of this, by the way, has answered your question, Vishnu. I personally prefer VTI for sort of a core holding. And then if I wanted to tilt towards, in this case, dividend appreciation, I don't know. I think that's perfectly reasonable if that's what you want to do. And in my case, I wouldn't tilt more than about 10%. That's just my own preference. Let me take your comment down so folks can see. What I was curious is what they hold. Pretty sort of meat and potatoes kind of companies. I'm kind of surprised this isn't more of a value fund than what Morningstar is showing. You know, the other thing I'd be curious to see, if we go back to chart and then we just compare this to VTI. Here it is. Boy, nothing's working tonight. Let me try Max and see if I can get the thing to load. Here we go. You can see they kind of move. There's a lot of overlap here. VTI kind of outperformed for a while, but now it's come back down. I mean, they're neck and neck. And that goes back to 06. So I don't know that there's a big difference here. Now, if it's in a taxable account, there could be a big difference or a difference. You want to look at distributions. Oh, okay. Let me go to the bottom just to make sure there's no video issues. You know, I was thinking, Noreen, I should give you my phone number so you can text me next week. I don't have my phone with me right now. That way, if there's an issue, you can just text me. All right. Okay. Okay, Peter. Why do you talk about the Fidelity Visa card? I feel like I'm being interrogated. I don't know. What did I talk about it? Oh, maybe it's why you don't talk about it up more. I don't know. Since it generates 2% when investing back into the account, the long-term return should beat any rewards points. Yeah, I definitely have some thoughts. I think Fidelity Visa is a great card and it's convenient, right? Because you have a Fidelity account, you know, the rewards can go into your account, but that doesn't make it any better than any other 2% card. I can take a 2% like Synchrony has one right here. I can show you. Wells Fargo has one. Citi has one. Pretty much all the big banks have, typically, not all, but most of them. I've got an article on my site that's got a list of them. I don't know the list. And if you know of some that I don't have on there, let me know. We'll get them added. But here they are. Citi. By the way, Citi, right? If we go back to, let's go to the review. It's got this $200 bonus. That's ending soon. I think like the 14th, but don't hold me to that. Yeah, Synchrony's got one. I don't know. Do they have a sign-up bonus? No. Here's Wells Fargo, which does have $200. Alliant, which has changed off and on. I'm not sure this is accurate. I need to look at that. They keep updating different things. Here's Fidelity. We got it on there. I need to add a link. Don't know why I don't have a link. That's a business card. In any event, the point is I can take the cash rewards from any credit card, have them sent to my checking account and off to whatever broker I want. So Fidelity, I think, is more convenient if you have a Fidelity account, and that's good. Tyler, you're welcome. I don't know what we're talking about, but my pleasure. Yes, the warning was telling me the bit rate was too low, Jay Davis. I just don't know what to do about it. I can shut down everything, but then I'd have to reset up the whole new stream, which I can do, but I think so far it's working. All right. Pan says, I favor Wells Fargo, I think, on the 2%. No, I don't actually. I've had the Citi Double Cash forever. But now I actually don't use any. I use Citi Double Cash a little bit, but I use a Bank of America card that pays a minimum of roughly 2.65%. But you have to have a Bank of America account and a certain amount of money in there. And I know not everyone banks there or wants to have the amount of money you have to have to get that rate, which is 100,000. But you can include Merrill Edge and like an IRA or something. Not like you have to keep that money in a checking account, but you do have to have a checking account. That's what I use now. But I know I don't talk about that one as much because I know a lot of people aren't going to want to jump through all those hoops. So Josh says, I contacted Portfolio Visualizer via email. They told me to enter Cash X for T-bill data. Okay. Yeah, Cash X is their ticker, if you will, for cash. And I guess they're putting bills into that category. Do you know of a way to calculate IBON data in Portfolio Visualizer? I don't. No. Now, you could maybe use TIPS as a substitute. I think they have TIPS. Let's go to, well, you could certainly use a TIP fund, right? But even in asset classes, I think they have TIPS. Well, maybe. Maybe I don't know. They do. So here. So you could use TIPS. I know they're different, but long term, I mean, they're trying to achieve similar things. So if you're doing an asset class, you know, you could do that. If you're doing your actual portfolio, I mean, you could use a TIPS fund. I think a short-term TIPS would make the most sense. The reason I say that is they're going to be less affected by interest rates than long-term TIPS. And I-bonds, I start to say they're not affected by interest rates. That's not really true. But your payout isn't, right? Because you redeem them at par from the government after a year whenever you want to. That doesn't technically mean they don't go down in value. It's like your house. You know, if you had a house in the 08, 09 crash, it went down in value. Now, you may not have sold, so you didn't feel the effect of that loss in value, but it went down in value. You know, as interest rates go up, existing bond values go down. If they're individual bonds and you hold them to maturity, you're not going to feel that. They don't get repriced. It's like holding a bank CD. It doesn't get repriced. You can always cash it in at par value, you know, whatever the balance of that CD is. Anyway. So STVCT says, should we duration match to our time horizon? I'm okay with the volatility of long bonds if they add some diversification. I'm 36. So duration is not the same thing as maturity. Well, at least in zero coupon bonds it is, but generally it's not, right? You could think of it as the average time it'll take to get all your money back, which includes the interest payments you earn along the way, and then when the bond matures, the principal. The higher the coupon rate, the lower the duration, right? Because if with a real high interest rate, you're getting more money along the way, right? So it brings the average down. So I should say the shorter the duration. I may have said longer. But in any event, I don't really look at it. There's probably an argument for doing that. I don't really look at it that way. For long-term investing, I just prefer intermediate term because I think it's a good balance between over the long term. This won't play out as we've seen this year, every year, between getting some yield, but not exposing the portfolio to pretty significant interest rate risk. So I personally prefer just an intermediate term fund. Now, that being said, you're 36. Let's assume this is for retirement. You're going to retire at 70. And you're just going to have a portfolio. You're not going to ever sell it. You know, you're going to stick to your asset allocation and you want to put long-term treasuries. My hunch is that'd probably be fine. The trick will become as you get closer and closer to retirement, there might be some times when you're to make a change to that. And you're just going to have to think that through as you get there. You know, you could put in a portfolio visualizer and try out different scenarios. I mean, if we look at, let's just try this just since we're here. Let's do long-term treasury. So in a normal market, in a normal yield curve, which we're not in at the moment, the longer the duration or maturity of a bond, the higher the yield, right? Normally. Let's see here. Let's do intermediate, and then we'll do short-term. Just to look at the differences. So this should go all the way back to 72, right? No, 78. So, and that's pretty much what we see. I don't know how well you can see that. Compound annual growth rate for long-term is 722, intermediate 648, short-term is 548. Again, you know, we've heard about inverted yield curve, right? Sometimes the yield on shorter-term treasuries is higher than longer-term, which is what we have now. But long-term, this plays out. But you can also see that the volatility is a lot higher. It's almost twice as measured by standard deviation as compared to intermediate term. And intermediate term is higher, you know, but they're still relatively stable investments. Again, I know 2022 is an exception. So that kind of these kind of numbers are why I really like intermediate term for me for long-term investing. But you know, you could get away with this, but it wouldn't be my first choice. I don't like the volatility. And at some point, you're going to have to figure out when do I step out of those long-term bonds. At least I think you will as you near retirement. Yeah, that's my view anyway. Oh, I didn't mention it, but if you have a topic or question, tag me in the chat so that I can, it helps me find things faster. All right. So this is from Conscience. What would you pick for a LCV, which is large cap value tilt in a brokerage account? So large cap value. So that means large companies as measured by their effectively their worth, according to the market. usually when people use that term, they're referring to U.S. companies, but there are large cap value international too. And value means that their price is relatively cheap as compared to their earnings and their net worth and that sort of thing. They tend to be older, more established companies. Procter & Gamble, most banks are value, and so on. In a brokerage account, I don't have one in my brokerage account, but I'm curious, if we just look at Schwab's, which we've looked at a lot, this is the U.S. dividend equity. So here it is. The portfolio, we'll see that it's squarely in large cap value. Boy, it's almost like right in the middle of that box. Ta-da! They stuck the landing. I don't know if that's on purpose. Yeah, probably not. Okay. So we want to go to performance, and we want to go to distributions. So no capital gains, right? That they would be blue. So none since 2018. And let's look at income for 21 is $2.25. And off of 77. So, you know, that's more than I would want to pay in a taxable account. Yeah. And that's what? It's like, isn't that like 4%? Let me do the math. Pull up my calculator. Whoops. I can't type. Let's see here. So it was, what was it? 220. Divided by, I'm just going to go by the year end. Oh no, well, 3%. So I guess that's probably okay. If I had to have this kind of fund, I mean, I have stocks that pay higher dividends, right? At least I think I do. I told you the show was going to be something else. What's Bank of America's yield? 2.39, not quite as high. Wells Fargo, I think, is lower, maybe. I'll show you what I'm looking at. Come on, Morningstar. Yeah, 257s are forward. How about Deere? Yeah, 114. Yeah, so I don't have an investment that much. But it wouldn't be the end of the world. Of course, it depends on your tax bracket, too. So I might put that in. Again, I like to keep as much dividends out of my taxable account as possible. But you're going to have, I mean, at the end of the day, you want a good fund. You could try Vanguard. You know, what's the Vanguard? Let's see what Vanguard's does. Vanguard Large Cap Value. Boy, I don't know if it's me or Morningstar. It's terrible. Here's what I'm looking at. Like, they're supposed to give me results here. Large cap. Yeah, that's okay. Oh, my goodness. Here we go. What's the ticker? VTV. How can I forget VTV? So let's just look at the portfolio. So it's not quite as much value, but it's close. You know, look at distributions. So paid 316 on, yeah, so this is paying out a lot less. Of course, you know, you have to look at performance too. I mean, that's ultimately what's the most important. So this looks like an interesting comment, but I'm wondering if it's in, okay, I think it's in a couple different chats and messages from Caleb. I was recently reading an interesting article from Richard Thaler where he talked about how even though dividends versus buybacks are generally less tax efficient, and that's true, although now there's that tax on buybacks, they can be beneficial from a behavioral perspective and keep people from panic selling when the stock is down. I agree with that completely. I don't know if there's a question after that, but I agree completely. And if dividends help you sleep at night, I mean, there's nothing wrong with dividends. I like my dividends. It's just, I think it's important to put them in proper perspective. Keeps you from making mistakes. But, you know, in retirement, I haven't actually done this, but I've actually been thinking about that this week, that I am going to figure out exactly how much all of my investments paid in dividends this year, including, it's easy in the taxable account. I don't reinvest them, but I mean, it's still easy no matter what. You can get this data from your brokerage, you know, your 401k, whatever. I'm going to add it all up. See, you know, the dollar amount, I don't really care about the percentage, and compare that to our expenses. So yeah, I think they can help folks, give folks comfort. You know, you have to remember dividends can then go down. They can also go up, but not keep up with inflation. Okay. You're welcome, Jeffrey. You said, thanks for sharing the 10K. I always like digging into 10Ks. Now, I have not read Apple's yet, and as a shareholder, I need to, and I will be doing that. You know, so Dave asks, any idea the dollar amount of Apple dividends Warren Buffett and Berkshire collect each quarter? There are folks that actually tabulate this. I don't know the answer to that, although we could figure it out. Let's just do this. Let's see. Apple shares owned by Google fills it in for me. They already know what I'm going to say. Let's see if they actually give us numbers. Let's see here. I could just look it up. They're going to file their 13F here soon, which is another form with the SEC. Actually, let's look at another. Here we go. We're going to go to the Berkshire Hathaway website. Fancy, isn't it? And maybe we can just do it off of the last report. So for 2021... it's almost like they intentionally, I think Warren Buffett runs his own website. That's what I'm concluding. I like the highlighted colors. That's really good. Oh, this is even better. I can't believe I'm making fun of Mr. Buffett's website. That is so wrong of me. I probably should just go to their 13F. It's probably going to take me too long to figure this out. Man, they've got a lot. $162 billion. So one way to do that, we could just, or $161 billion. We could do $161 billion. Hang on. 1, 2, 3, that's thousands. 1, 2, 3, that's millions. 1, 2, 3, I think that's billions divided by... Now, this was back then. I don't know what Apple's share price was. I know there's an easier way to do this, but we'll say 150. That's a lot. I'm not going to keep doing this. We'll figure it out. I know people have done this. Amount of dividends Apple pays Berkshire Hathaway. Someone's done the math. Here we go. According to The Fool, and this was as of October. Here we go. Berkshire's position in Apple alone made $785 million in dividends in 2021. There it is. That's slightly more than I made. Zero here, a zero there. Toss a couple commas. All right. Looking for questions. Here we go. I'm about to sneeze. I'm going to get a Kleenex just in case. I know it's exciting. What's going to happen? Will he sneeze or won't he? There's still people watching this show. That is, you guys are just, you're the best. Talk about loyal. I mean, the burdens you take on watching this show. All right, Noreen, should I invest in the 401k or Roth 401k at work? My tax rate is currently 12%, 5 to 10 years, possibly longer until retirement. Well, the theory would be, so you got 12%, but you've also want to consider state income tax, right? If you live in a state with income tax. And then the question is, if you didn't do the Roth, right? You did the regular 401k, you're going to save that amount in taxes now, but then fast forward to when you start pulling the money out, which could be when you retire, maybe it's when your RMDs kick in or whatever. How much were you paying taxes then? And it's not just your tax bracket, right? Because that was the point of the article I linked to in the newsletter this past Sunday from Kitsies. It's really your effective tax rate, not your tax bracket. You know, depending on your circumstances, there may not be a difference, but there can be. And I'm trying to find that article now. Well, if you get the newsletter, it's there, but I just went to Kitsies to see if I could find it quickly. And of course I can't. Man, he writes a lot of stuff. Well, it's in the newsletter. Oh, here it is. Why the value of a Roth conversion is calculated using true marginal tax rates. But in any event, that's sort of the analysis that you go through. That can be a difficult analysis. I mean, there's just so many different variables. You know, tax rates could change. Your marital status, your filing status could change. You know, there's Social Security to factor in and taxes on that. Medicare premiums and the effect income can have on that. So there's just so many different factors. You know, are you going to give money to charity? You know, how that would affect it. So, but generally, I think most people up to about the 24% tax bracket, if I knew nothing else, I would say the Roth. Again, that doesn't mean it's right for you. You really just have to do the analysis and make some educated guesses about the future. So, all right. I'm going to drop to the bottom of the chat for a second. Okay. Looks like there's still been video issues off and on. The latest is it's coming through clear. I don't know. I may have to get rid of Restream. Maybe that's the problem. Because I literally restarted my computer today. Dave says I should short my chess rating at 2,000. I'm not sure. Should I be hurt by that? I'm not sure. I think I should be upset. I didn't look at the poll. 78% said no. Yeah, that would be me too. How do I end this thing? So I'm going to do another poll that someone suggested. And so here we go. What percentage of your investments are managed by a professional? And we'll have 0%. I'll just pick the closest. Oops. We're going to do 25%, 50%, 75%. Really? I can't do more than four options? All right. We're going to do 33%, 67%, and 100%. There we go. Thanks for the reminder, Bob. So Sarah has a question. Can you cover setting up a Roth IRA for inheritance purposes for multiple heirs? What are your thoughts about how best to approach this? Well, the easiest way that I know of would be to simply list them as beneficiaries on the IRA. And you can list multiple beneficiaries, with percentages. And so it doesn't go through your estate, doesn't go through probate, and goes directly to them. Now, you know, you might want to talk to a trust and estates lawyer, particularly if you have a trust involved for estate purposes. But even then, I think what my lawyer has told me. So as between my wife and I, you know, we're each the beneficiaries of our different retirement accounts. But then I think, if I'm remembering correctly, the secondary beneficiary should be the revocable or revocable, if you prefer, trusts. I'm pretty sure that's correct. But, you know, that could be state specific for all I know. I'm not a trust and estates lawyer, never have been. It's very complicated stuff. I don't, I pay a lawyer to do all that for us. But I think the easiest way to set up an inheritance is just to name the people you want as beneficiaries. Yeah. But again, you definitely want to get professional help on that. Not actually doing it, that's very easy. But I would talk, you know, I'd make it as part of maybe an overall estate plan. Here's an interesting question. Peter says, does it make sense to draw more money out of an inherited IRA during down markets if you plan to invest in after-tax account since it will have a longer holding period? Huh. Well, I think it still comes down to a tax question, right? You're still taking dollars out. I understand the same number of dollars, you know, could represent more shares, I suppose. But you're still taking dollars out. They're going to have a tax consequence. I suppose if you didn't take it out, and let's just say the market went up next year, and then you were forced to take it out then, you would pay higher taxes. So there may be something to that. I haven't really thought about that. Certainly, you'd rather take it out when it's the lowest value possible, right? That makes sense. But again, you'd have to make a judgment as to whether, let's say, taking it all as an example out this year, because you're thinking, well, if it goes up, it'll be a higher value I take out. Now, that may or may not happen. But you also have to evaluate the tax consequences this year of doing that or in any given year. And my hunch is, at the end of the day, all you can do is make a best guess. But that's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about taking, well, yeah. I think it's an interesting question, maybe worth considering. At the end of the day, I still think you need to evaluate the actual dollars you want to take out and what the tax consequences are going to be versus perhaps taking some of it out this year, but maybe waiting for another till next year or spreading it out over a number of years. Based on your personal tax situation. All of which is to say, I don't think I was very helpful on that one. I'll have to give that one some more thought. Jeff wants to know my thoughts on VWINX. Pardon me. I know that was lovely, wasn't it? I could have done this, and then you can't. Oh, but see, you'll see it up there. See, now you see it again. Dag nabbit. Here we go. Now I can do it. All right. Nothing to see here. Okay. VWINX versus VTMFX. I have no idea, Jeff. Oh, so Wellesley. I don't know that. I'm not a big fan of what of Wellesley. And I'm not a big fan of balanced funds in a brokerage account, personally. But let me pull up VTMFX because it may be a balanced fund too. It is. So generally, I'm not a fan of balanced funds in a taxable account. because of the income. I mean, the yield here, 291 is not crazy. This one's 174. That's really not bad. Let me see what the allocation is. Yeah, it's 50-50, more or less. I'm surprised the income is so low. What's the SEC yield? I guess maybe they don't have that listed here because it's a balanced fund. Let's see. Only 59 cents, but it had a value of 42. So that's still not a significant distribution at all. That surprises me. Let's see, Wellesley. Wellesley, you got to deal with capital gains. So from a pure tax perspective, VTMFX is going to have a lower tax hit. At least historically, that's been the case. However, I'm going to guess Wellesley's outperformed this one, which is ultimately what you care about. Although they're two different funds, right? Because VTMFX has got just under 50% of equities. And I'm pretty sure Wellesley is over 60%. I thought, and I would be wrong. Oh, I'm confusing it with Wellington. Well, the point though is the same, significantly different asset allocation. So to me, that's the most important thing first. But then, yeah, this Wellesley, I would not be putting this fund. I might not put either one, but I certainly would not be putting this fund in a taxable account myself. This one, the distributions didn't seem bad at all, which surprises me. Again, you know, if yields go up, eventually the distributions could be higher. Let's go back to performers for a second, look at distributions. You know, you go back to 28, they don't give you much data here, do they? 2020, it was 66 cents on 33, so that's about 6, 12, 18. That's just under 2%, I think. So, you know, one of the reasons they've been lower, 22 is not over with yet, so we can't count that, but it's because, you know, yields were so low. As yields go up, this could end up distributing more and more. So that's something to think about. And, you know, the other thing is once you get a bunch of built-in gains, you don't want to sell it. So I really wouldn't personally put either one of these probably in a taxable account. The PAN, just so you know, I pay a fortune for internet with like a gazillion gigabytes of upload and download. Let's see. I don't know what the problem is. And I even paid a fortune to have a whole Wi-Fi system put in my house. So like, you know, I don't just have, you know, the telephone company's Wi-Fi in some corner of my house. I have wireless access points hardwired on every level of the house, including one that I can see. It's right there 10 feet away. And still I'm providing this level of service. It's terrible. Corrales Cruiser wants to know if I'm the face of Personal Capital. That's funny. I'll show you why they're asking that. And that guy's much better looking than I am. There he is. I mean, first of all, look at that hair. I don't have that kind of hair. I mean, it's gray, but that wavy hair, nope. Normally, I get, so when I was younger, people thought I looked like Huey Lewis. I certainly can't sing like Huey Lewis. He was one of my favorites growing up in high school. And then later it was Anderson Cooper. I don't know. I don't get it. The thing about Anderson Cooper, I mean, look at that skin. I know it's probably a touched photo, but yeah, I don't have such nice skin. Well, you can't have everything. Well, how's the poll? Let's see. Most of you, 84%, have no money with professionals. 8% have somewhere around 33%. 5% of you have around 2/3. and only 3% of you have 100%. Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I'm kind of a, you know, this is a do-it-yourself channel. By the way, everyone is welcome. Well, including Michigan fans. That's going to be a heck of a game. VJ, speaking of Michigan, here's VJ. Hello from Detroit Bogleheads. Welcome, VJ. It'd be fun if we both went out the rest of our games. You got to be careful about that, though. You don't want to look too far ahead. You get stung from a team and you don't realize it. But, like, I mean, you know, Northwestern turned into a game for us. I think the play calling by Ryan Day was atrocious in the first half. But I know, get in line. Everybody wants to complain about a coach's play calling. But I mean, we've got injuries. We're playing against one of the worst run defenses in college football. And the wind gusts were literally 30 to 40 miles an hour. He's trying to throw the ball downfield. I don't get it. Run it. Short passes. And that's what they did in the second half, and they ended up doing okay. It kind of reminded me of last year's Michigan game. You know, you can say that you know, both teams have the same conditions, obviously, but that's not to say that it affects them the same way. Ohio State has one of the best passing games in college, some of the best wide receivers in college. And so when the weather conditions make it difficult to throw the ball, it hurts Ohio State more than just about any team they'll play this year. And then if you don't have the passing game, it makes running the ball harder. All right, enough of football. Okay. So Rob Harris says, wouldn't winning $1.x trillion ruin one's life? So here's my take on it. And maybe I'm just totally naive. I think my wife and I could win $1.9 billion. If we told no one, I don't think it would ruin our lives, and I don't think it would change it much. And I know you're all rolling your eyes, like, oh, clearly the cough medicine, Rob, is... the problem is that, you know, you think about winning that kind of money. And I know, yeah, you take the lump sum, you pay taxes, you only end up with $600 or $700 million. But let's imagine with that kind of money, you give $25 million to your family. So your children, brothers and sisters, their children, your parents, spouse's parents. I mean, why not? You know, you give away $200 million. What would those lives look like 10 years from now? I think there's a really good chance that many of them would be ruined and relationships would be ruined. Yeah. I didn't play. I played the lottery, not very often, and only when it's like a big jackpot like today. But and then if you're not going to share it with people, what's the point of winning it? I mean, like, you know, I mean, it's one thing to use the money to like take care of your needs, maybe retire early, get freedom. But then what are you going to do? Just start buying houses? I don't know. People say, well, you can travel. I could travel now. Maybe not in the same way. You could travel with $1 billion. But I mean, no. Maybe I'm just not creative enough. All right, back to investing. Dinesh wants to know, what is your take on SPGP ETF for large cap value growth tilt? It's a large cap value and a growth tilt? I don't know. Let's see here. Let's look this one up. SPGP. Invesco. Oh, GARP. Growth at reasonable price. So the idea of, here it is. The idea of GARP stands for growth at reasonable price. So it would be a growth fund. Right, growth companies that are growing their earnings and revenue, you know, revenues faster than most companies, but that aren't priced insanely. So like, you know, it's come down, but like it wouldn't include an Amazon when it was trading at hundreds and hundreds of you know, multiple PE, or Tesla. I don't think anyway. We can look at the portfolio. Yeah, I like this concept. And I have looked at this fund in the past. Let me pull down your comment so it's not on the screen now. I have looked at this fund in the past. You know, it's not terribly overpriced, 33 basis points. My hunch is this is a pretty good fund. The question for me would be, where exactly does it fit for me? It's interesting. It shows it as a value fund, or right on the border of value and growth and blend. Let's see what kind of... So this almost looks more like a value fund. Look at the PE, 11. But let's look at the portfolio. Yeah. Many of these companies I've never heard of. Not that that means anything. Of course, I've heard of many of them at the same time. Like Alphabet, that's interesting. Oh, Apple's in here. I wonder how they measure. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. I wonder how they measure, determine what companies are in. And it must be a combination of the expected growth versus the price relative to earnings and book value. I'm going to look it up. Look up their website. Here it is. Let's see if they tell us anything. Oh, it's an index. So it's just a growth at reasonable price index that they're following. So I got 75 securities. I didn't notice that on the Morningstar. I didn't look, but so they have high growth scores. It'd be interesting to see how they do that to the index methodology. So if you wanted to dig into this, what you would do is you'd grab this. So this is an index. And we can search this for this index. And it takes us to SP Global. And it might give us some, like, here's methodology. So we could figure out, we could read this, which is long, but if it's important to you, you're considering the investment, you'd want to understand how this index is constructed, which we're not going to do now because that would be a long read. But I might read it later. Interesting. All right. So this is a question. This is from NetGhost. What is Microsoft's div? I assume dividend. So this is a good thing. How do you figure out a company's dividend? Well, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. I'm going to go to Yahoo Finance, right? So here we are. And see this whole, they don't like my ad blocker. Anyway, so we'll type in Microsoft. MSFT is the ticker. And we get all this info. And we can find the yield. Let's see. So what they're looking at here is the forward dividend and yield. So, you know, the dividend over the next 12 months is going to be $2.72, which comes out to be 1.23% of its current price. I don't know if it's based on after hours or last close. I don't know. Doesn't matter. So it's got a yield of 1.23, which is just the amount of the dividend, annual dividend. They get paid out quarterly, but the annual dividend divided by the price. So as the price changes, right, the yield changes. So if tomorrow the stock market dropped by 50% and every company went down by 50%, this yield would be 246 because it would double, right? Because the yield would, the dividend wouldn't have changed, but it would be, you'd divide that into a much smaller share price because it went down by half. So you know, yield is important to understand, but you have to keep in mind that the yield change can change, and sometimes dramatically, even while the dividend doesn't change at all. Just because, you know, we go into a bear market or a bull market, you know, the price of some stock goes up or down significantly. So just something to keep in mind. But there you go. That's how you could find the dividend of a stock, or the dividend yield. And this is, you know, again, based on forward. Typically, for most companies, they change the dividend once a year. So they set the dividend policy quarterly, but it's usually the same. And then once a year, you know, that's always the big question. Is a company going to increase their dividend or not? Oh, they did. Great. Or they didn't. Don't know. There's no rule. They could change it every quarter, or they could issue dividends more frequently. Sometimes they issue a special dividend. I think I owned Ford stock one time when they had a special dividend of like 10%. They probably wish they had that money back. Okay. Pardon me. Ah, John wants to know, you know, in case he wins, how would I invest the money? That's a good question. Does it matter? I don't know. Bitcoin. Just kidding. Most of it would be in index funds. But it would be a bigger discussion, right? Because for us, it would be, first of all, with that kind of money, do we want to set up our own charitable foundation? Do we just want to use Fidelity's or Vanguard's? I'd probably, it's simple. I mean, it's just a few extra zeros at the end of a number. You know, I think for some people, they would want to invest with purpose in a way that went beyond just the public markets. Makes perfect sense to me. They might want to own real businesses. They might want to start buying large, you know, real estate projects, maybe developing them. I don't know that I would want to do those things because all of those things take time. I'm not sure that's where I would want to commit my time. So for me, the decision about how I would invest would largely depend on how I want to spend my time. And I don't want to spend my time hunting down businesses, evaluating them. I mean, some people would enjoy that. It's great. It's not how I'd want to do it. So most of mine would probably be not unlike how I invest it now. Index funds, some individual stocks. I mean, what else would you need? I mean, think about the dividend on that. What would that come out to? So let's say you cleared $700 million after taxes. That's just a guess. So I got to do all 700, thousands. Millions. I think that's right. Hundreds, thousands, millions. And let's say overall you earned a 2% dividend. That's pretty, you know, I think that's doable. You'd make $14 million a year. I could have done that without the calculator, couldn't I? Anyway, $14 million a year. Now that's before taxes. So, you know, you got to factor that in. All right. Was there a save better question? Ah, there was. Pardon me. Okay, I'm back. Save better is what Fred meant, is very clumpy to use, but gets better. I didn't have any issues with Save Self, but you can't withdraw your money without talking to someone. Now, the good news is they were great, and the conversation lasted like 45 seconds or maybe a minute, and it was done. But yeah, I think they're trying to add more features to the website. But I got to tell you, their rates, I mean, I keep looking for better rates. The latest one I found, they did up their no penalty CD, which, by the way, I meant to tell you this. You have to keep your money in there now for 30 days, and that was a change. So if you open up a new no-penalty CD, it's locked in there for 30 days. I think it's 3.75, but they now have a 22-month CD that's issued by Sky One Federal Credit Union. Now, it's a normal CD. I don't know what the early withdrawal penalties are, but there would be some. It's not a no-penalty CD. It's playing 5%, and I just can't find better than that, particularly for that term. Now, like you can go to Fidelity brokered CDs and you might be able to do a tad better. No, you really can't. 4.9 is the highest at the moment, and that's a 3-year. So what Save Better does is they go and negotiate with these banks. I don't know how they get them to pay that kind of rate. Like on our site, AllCards, when you go to the the CDs page. So we have it divided by term, but like we have one page right here. And it's just basically all the CDs. So this is a little out of date. So Fidelity's, the thing about Fidelity is it changes daily. And so we don't update that their rate daily. I think it's weekly. So it's now 4.9. There's Sky One. These are all brokered CDs. But when you get past that, you know, they go down pretty sharply, pretty quickly. I just haven't figured out how Save Better is able to negotiate that kind of rate. Anyway, here's a good rate for 15 months, 4.5. All right. Yeah, so I don't know if this was in reference to the lottery. If I did win that kind of money, I would fly like NetJets or whatever. I wouldn't buy a plane. My stepmother owned a plane, but it was a Cessna, and she was a pilot. But I would definitely do the NetJets thing. Absolutely. Is that what it's called? I think so. Fractional ownership. All right. Kenny has an interesting question. He says, I've heard you say that when a dividend is paid, the share price drops accordingly, which is true. The exchange itself makes change to the price before the market opens. Being that VYM, let me see what VYM is. Just Vanguard's high dividend yield fund. Has compounded annually at 8% since 2006. Wouldn't that share price drop just by an intraday move? I'm not sure I understand that question. Pardon me. I'm starting to fade here. I'm going to do my best to get through the next 11 minutes. Well, let's look at performance. I just turned my microphone down so I could cough. So hopefully when I turned it back up, I got it to the right level. So here's 5-year performance, 10-year performance. These are typically inclusive of reinvested dividends, I'm pretty sure, but we have a portfolio visualizer. Take a look at it there. VYM. Let's try that. There it is, 100%. And let's show income. Let's display income. And reinvest the dividends is yes, right? So if we look at that, since 07 anyway, it's been right around 8%, but that's reinvesting dividends. So, I guess I'm not following your question. When they pay a dividend, the price goes down. But then, of course, as the companies earn more profits over time, their stock still rises, right? If we, we can look at the income. It's down here. You always like that upward sloping trend, right? 2022, of course, is not over yet. So I guess I'm not following your question, maybe. I'm sure it's me, though. Like I said, the cold is getting the better of me. Dave says, why is a 36-year-old investing in bonds? This is a reference to an earlier question. I think that's a fair question, but I think I had bonds at 36. I didn't have a lot. Looking for questions. I think you guys have just given up on me. It's like, Rob, call it a night, man. Look what Fred said. Tidy yourself, please. Thanks. Tidy? I don't know. I'm feeling a little Untidy. Dave says, talk about the tax treatment of qualified dividends. Well, they're taxed as long-term capital gains. I'm not sure what else there is to say about it. Is there some other nuance that maybe I'm just missing? Probably. Let's see. Excuse me. All right. Are you a fan of SCHD? I am. I'm thinking of adding a little in my Roth IRA and my taxable account. I did the same. Well, not taxable account, but the Roth IRA. I was wondering if you recommend something else or just sticking with the VU and VTI. Well, VTI is the core U.S. stock holding for me. But let's see here. I do have, I think I put most of our Roth in this fund. And my thinking at the time was, I like the fund. It's in a Roth, so I don't have to worry about any taxes in terms of the dividend, which does have a decent yield, you know, significantly higher than VTI, more than twice as high, right? And I liked the lower value focus, and this was earlier this year, and it paid off at least so far. I've lost money this year, right? If we go to performance, it's down. But it's down a lot less. My theory at the time was, I think it's a good value. I think, I don't know when, but I think it'll, at least over the relative short term, do better than the total market. So far, I've been proven right, but give it a couple of months and I could be wrong. But again, I'm not doing that as sort of some short-term investment. I don't plan to sell it. I have no plans to sell it. And it's a relatively small part of the portfolio. So it's not like it's moving the needle much. We don't have much in Roths. Oh, another credit card question from Ram. Citi 2% cash rewards. If you use your rewards to pay back your Citi bill, okay, they don't give you your second 1%. I've actually talked about that, not on the show, but yeah, that's among credit card folks, this is a well-known thing. So the way the Citi Double Cash works is you get 1% at the purchase, and then you get 1% when you pay your bill. You can take your rewards and apply them to your statement. If you do that, you don't earn the second 1%. So I don't ever do that. I pull the money out. I have them deposited into my bank account. So if you use the Citi Double Cash, that's what you'll want to do. But nice point. Thanks for bringing that up. All right. I see more issues with the resolution. I'm sorry. I don't know what to do about it. I may have to just get, I'm gonna email Restream when we're done, and I may just have to get rid of it. But I like it because I can put up your comments like this one from Jay. Rob is coming in crystal clear here. And from Norse mythology, it is weird. Okay. Huh. Let's look at this question from Dave. If 401k has a match, those dollars and gains are taxable. So go with Roth with employee money. I guess I'm not following the question. It's certainly true that if you contribute to a Roth 401k and there's an employer match, the matches always go into a regular traditional 401k. So effectively, you'd have two accounts. And if you ever convert it to an IRA, you'd have to have a Roth IRA and a rollover IRA. I'm not sure though that's your point. Vishnu wants a video on tax loss harvesting. I've talked about that a fair amount in the past. I guess my question to you, Vishnu, would be, what specifically do you want to know, like how it works? I can certainly do that. I'm going to my channel now to see. I don't know. Maybe I've already done something on tax loss. I know I've talked about it on the live show before, but I guess I haven't done a video just on tax loss harvesting. I can certainly add it to the list. I've got a long list. Oh. It's funny, Dave. I thought about this, or David, I thought about this the other day. Is Rob going to post the video of pulling the sled through the neighborhood? I could use a good motivational video to get me to work out. I did promise I'd do that. I haven't pulled the sled in a while. So I'm doing Pilates twice a week. It's one-on-one. We go through mat, and then it's usually reformer. I do some work on the Cadillac. On the Cadillac, let me show you the Cadillac. Pilates people will know what all this is. Pilates Cadillac. Here's the Cadillac. Okay, this is a good picture. Hang on, pulling it up. Man, $4,000? Holy cow. And the picture doesn't come up. Let's go to images. Okay, I'll show you this. Well, the picture I wanted to show you is not there. Anyway, here's the Cadillac. It looks like a medical kind of, like something you'd see in a hospital. So the last time I was there, I had to grab the bars up here while my feet were suspended at this end and basically do elevated rows. That was fun. And I'm starting Baptiste power yoga in like 95 degree room. I'm going to start doing that here soon. Oh. It's 8:29. If I can just make it one more minute. Okay. Here we go. From Sophia. I just took your poll, and starting in 2023, I'll be managing her and her husband's investment portfolio myself. Thanks for the education. Well, congratulations and best of luck. Okay, well, here's someone else. Going back to that trust thing from Dave, he says that's how he and his wife's IRAs are set up. The revocable trust covers is the contingent beneficiary. All right, before we go, we'll do this. John says, I like the polls. Can you do the age of the viewer poll? I'm curious. I don't know if people want to give their age. This is interesting. So when I click, I'll show you this. When I click this, here's where I start a poll. It's down here. But there's a start a Q&A. I don't know what's that supposed to be about. I got to figure that out. This whole thing is Q&A. Anyway, start a poll. How old are you? I hate this thing. This is a Grammarly thing. Let me quit this thing. How old are you? I can only put in four options. So I'll say 30. I'll say, how about less than or equal to 30? Does that make sense? 40, 50, or 60 plus? Will anyone answer the question? That's the question. Well, we got answers coming in. While we're doing that, DBC Lower wants to know what the initial withdrawal rate could be on a 30-year retirement if you don't adjust for inflation. It's actually not 8%, it turns out. And if you Google the Trinity study on withdrawal rates, they actually do part of that analysis, as I recall. This was a paper published a few years after Bill Bingham's. They look at this question. It surprised me that it was as low as it was, but it was somewhere closer to 5%, as I recall. but check that out. So look at this. So I must attract, I'll say older. I hope I haven't offended anyone. I would be in this bucket, the 50-year-old bucket, right? Square in the middle of that thing. So it's about 37%, 31, 60 and older. But look, we got young folks that are wanting to learn how to invest. So that's good. Before I go, let me look up this Trinity study. I have the paper, but it'll be easier just to Google it, I think. And I'll show you what I mean. Oh, I don't want that. See if I can download it. Oh, I don't want to join anything. Did it download? Here we go. Yeah. So here it is. Here's the study. And I'm pretty sure they looked at not adjusting. By the way, it's called the Trinity Study because they were all from Trinity University. And you'll get down here. There's some charts, as I recall. It's been a while since I've looked at it, but let's see here. Here we go. Yeah, so if you look here, this says portfolio success rate with monthly withdrawals. That's table one. Table two is portfolio success rate with inflation adjusted monthly withdrawals, right? So that tells me that this is not inflation adjusted. But that doesn't actually make sense to me now that I look at it, because the percentages are higher with inflation adjusted. That can't be right. Well, they're higher here, but they're not higher there. But you get to 30 years and you're still not at 100%. Of course, theoretically, you would be, right? I mean, if you're just taking a percentage, theoretically, you'll never run out of money, but you could be taking a few bucks out. So they must have used an assumption on the minimum withdrawal, which you can read the paper and figure that out. But the other thing you might be able to do, now that I think about it, is let's go to FI Calc. I think, yeah. So 30 years, $1 million portfolio, and let's not adjust it for inflation, right? But and let's do it as, rather than a constant dollar, we'll do a percent of portfolio. Now, you can also add this minimum here, right? Which I think is important. Because if you take the minimum off, I mean, let's do 50%. Now, why would that be? That doesn't make sense to me. You should never run out of money. Because you can always take out 50% of something. But maybe they have some failure that's a little different. I don't know. But in any event, let's go to something more practical. 6%, 100% success rate. But let's see. Now we add in the minimum withdrawal. 20,000 is not much. We're taking out 60 grand the first year. So let's just say, let's say we don't want to take out less than 50. See, now you start to see problems. Right. But if you literally said, I don't care about that, I just want to take out a percent, let's put in 8%. This goes down fast, though. It gets ugly. So you could use FI Calc to kind of explore that, that question. All right, gang, there you go. Thanks for hanging in there with me. I don't know what's going on with the video. I'll try to figure that out before next week. Hopefully I'll not have a cold and you won't have to deal with that, because it's no fun. And my first cold since COVID, right? I haven't had a cold in 3 years. Anyway, well, listen, I hope you will have a great week. I will have some videos out this week, notwithstanding this cold thing. And so should have some out this week. I am looking at more financial planning software, and we'll have some more up on that, probably not this week, but in the coming weeks. So yeah, there you go. Thanks for hanging in there with me. Hope you have a great week. Until next time, remember, the best thing money can buy is financial freedom. And I'm out. I survived it to 836.